And one more poem that I found the Hallmark card. Because the, of course, the psychological fear that we have the most is of losing our mind. And this says, just a line to say I'm living, that I'm not among the dead, though I'm getting more forgetful and more mixed up in the head. For sometimes I can't remember when I stand at the foot of the stair if I must go up for something or if I've just come down from there. And before the fridge, so often my poor mind is full of doubt. Have I just put food away or have I come to take some out? And there are times when it's dark out with my nightcap on my head, I don't know if I'm retiring or just getting out of bed. So if it's my turn to write you, there's no need in getting sore. I may think that I have written and don't want to be a bore. Remember, I do love you. I wish you were here, and it's nearly mail time, so I'll say goodbye, dear. There I stood beside the mailbox with my face so very red. Instead of mailing you my letter, I have opened it instead. I love my new bifocals. My dentures fit me fine. My hearing aid is perfect, but Lord, I miss my mind. Now, it's much harder to hear the possibility that one can extricate oneself from that which changes when the changes involves one's own personality. Because while you may be able to see the body as object, it's very hard to see the personality as object because you've identified with it for so long. You think that's who you are. And now we're getting more into the depth of the matter, because the question one asks is there a place to stand in relation to change where one is not frightened by it? Is there a place to stand in the presence of change where one can be with the changes, even enjoy the changes, work with the changes, become an elder, do all the things that changing involves, and at the same moment cultivate equanimity, spaciousness, emptiness, awareness, clarity? And that's really what the issue of spiritual, of the deep spiritual work is about. Now, there are stages of that work, and the first stage, I think, is the recognition of what is most comfortable for people in spiritual dimension is something called soul, which says you are still a separate entity, but you aren't the incarnation. You aren't what was born. So you aren't your personality and you aren't your body. Here are just a few images to work with in thinking about this. One is by Yeats. An aged man is but a paltry thing, tattered coat upon a stick. Unless soul claps its hands and sing, and louder sing for every tatter in its mortal dress. O sages standing in God's holy fire, be the singing masters of my soul. Consume my heart away, sick with desire and fastened to a dying animal. It knows not what it is, and gather me into the artifice of eternity. Pull my soul out of the identification with the body. And in T.S. Eliot's poem, East Coker, as we grow older, the world becomes stranger, the pattern more complicated of dead, of living. Old men and women ought to be explorers. Here and there does not matter. We must be still and still moving into another intensity, for further union, a deeper communion. Through the dark, cold, and empty desolation, the wave cry, the wind cry, the vast waters of the petrel and the porpoise. In my end is my beginning. You and I are paying the price of having grown up in such a materially oriented society, such an externalized society, such a society that measures people in terms of their products, their achievements, their possessions, their knowledge, instead of cultivating the quality of being. In the East, one spends one's life, from a spiritual sense, in preparing for aging and death. We have spent most of our lives in denying aging and death. And the predicament we face now is that once we become older, when we suddenly realize there is another agenda, it's harder to do it now because it's harder to not be distracted by all of the changes that are happening in our bodies and our minds. And that is why you are encouraged spiritually. It says, die in the morning so you need not die at night. And that has to do with go through the spiritual transformations when you are young so that when you get old, you will have built up the resonance within yourself to be able to transform the changes without getting caught in them. Mahatma Gandhi had spent so many years in inner spiritual practice and with the mantra he did, Ram, 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 with his beads, Ram, 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 that when he walked out into the garden that day and a man came up and shot him 4 times at blank range right in the chest, as Gandhi was falling over, he didn't say, oof, or save India, or you are forgiven. He said, Ram. He was so ready to move forward that at the moment, the unexpected moment, he was ready to utter that mantra which would take him into the next space. The depth of the understanding of that particular image, of the preparation, not just for the moment of death, but for the process of aging, it is a lifetime's work. To know how to grow old is the masterwork of wisdom, one of the most difficult chapters in the great art of living. And one best done early on. T.S. Eliot has one other quote. He says, we cannot stick to the moving finger of time on the surface of the sphere, but must descend into the still point of the turning world. That is, one of the traps that our mind is in is the trap of time. And aging has to do with time. And I must ask you, is there a part of you that is not in time? And if so, find it and rest in it. That's the whole mystical journey. Now the predicament is, the part of you that is not in time, you can't see it, you can't smell it. You can't hear it. You can't even think about it. And yet it is. You can only be it. You can't know it. Because the thinking mind knows objects, and objects are in time. What a frustrating thing. It's like having a flashlight that you shine on this and that, on a memory, on a plan, on a sensation, on a feeling. But when does the flashlight shine on itself? And the flashlight itself is that part of you, which you could call, whatever you call it is just going to be a word which isn't going to be it, but let's call it awareness. Awareness has no time. It has no space. It doesn't die. It wasn't born. It's not going anywhere. Everybody is having continuous experience or continuous understanding or resting in awareness, but you are so fascinated with what you are being aware of, you never notice the awareness itself. Isn't that strange? What you begin to see is the way in which the journey, the spiritual journey, is one of going deeper and deeper into your being, to go in behind that which changes, to find that which does not change. And it's not a that, but find not change. And in that process, you start to use the things of your life as your vehicles of doing it. And all of the things I've talked about, the physical breakdown, the psychological breakdown, all can become the stuff you use in order to go behind it by saying, not this, not this, not this. And when you know how to use aging to go behind time, then you begin to see that all of that stuff that's happening to you not only might not be bad, it might even be grace. There's the story of the man who had a horse, and the horse ran away, and his neighbor came up and said, "Oh, that's terrible." The man said, "You never know." And the next day the horse came back and it was leading two other wild horses. And the neighbor said, "That's wonderful." And the farmer said, "You never know." And then his son was training one of the wild horses, and while he was riding the wild horse, and the neighbor came up and said, "That's terrible." And the farmer said, "Yeah." And then the Cossack army came through recruiting everybody, taking all the young men that were able, but they didn't take the son because he had a broken leg. And the neighbor came up and said, "That's wonderful." And the farmer said, "Yeah." And on it goes, you see. You begin to experience that the very stuff of aging becomes stuff to work with for your spiritual journey. There are some advantages of aging in that you are like the Chung Tzu's old gnarled tree that no woodsman cuts down anymore. So it can do its own business. You become irrelevant, so you can do inner work. Here's Frances, a resident in a nursing home. She says, "Lack of physical strength keeps me inactive and often silent. They call me senile. Senility is a convenient peg on which to hang nonconformity," she says. "A new set of faculties seems to be coming into operation. I seem to be waking to a larger world of wonderment, to catch little glimpses of the immensity and diversity of creation. More than at any other time of my life, I seem to be aware of the beauties of our spinning planet and the sky above. Old age is sharpening my awareness." That's senility. I had an extraordinary image of this when I was taking care of my father, who died about 3 years ago at 90. And over the years, my father had been a very effective political, social animal, very successful. As he got older, during the last 3 years, he got very quiet inside. And he just smiled a lot. And I used to sit with him and hold his hand, and we'd look at sunsets. We had never done that all our lives, because we were always busy, what do we do now? You know, that kind of active world. So a man came to visit, a relative came to visit my father, who had never gotten along well with him. And he said, "Hi, how are you doing?" And my father just smiled at him. And the fellow walked out of the room and he said, "That bastard, he still won't talk to me." And then my aunt came along, who loved my father incredibly. She said, "George, how are you?" And he just smiled at her. And she said, "Oh, poor George, what have they done to you? Where are you? They've gone, you've gone away." There he and I were sitting. We were both in ecstasy, just sitting and smiling. We were totally at peace. It was like washing the Buddha all the time. It was incredible. I mean, he was just blissed out all the time. He didn't even know himself. They were both miserable. Isn't that interesting? They were miserable because their model of who he should be because of who he was, but that isn't who he is. And the interesting question is whether you will allow the moment to be real or not. The wonderful line, "The very frailty of age guards its secrets. The inner world of the old is seldom worded. To speak of half-formed ideas which come with attunement to inner self is to destroy their growth," said Margaret Keyes. See, when I say to you, you are looking for a place in you that is not form, that is not in time, that is not in space, it's not something you can talk about. All your words are just fingers pointing at the moon. They're not the moon. And when you get old and you can't talk so much, then you're in a position where you may be able to hear those components that are not talkable about. Otherwise, you keep reducing the world to what you can talk about. It's so interesting how age works to the advantage spiritually. I mean, I go to Burma, say, to sit in meditation for 2 months. I go into a cell, I sit down, no books, no letters, no television, nobody to talk to, nowhere. I just sit and go inward. And I go into as quiet a place as I can. But look what happens when you get old. You go deaf, you go blind, you've got arthritis, you can't move around. What an ideal time to meditate. I mean, if any message was clearer, that's it. Isn't that the optimum time to be able to sit down and shut up and really listen inward? And yet we treat it as if it's an error or a failing. Isn't that bizarre? Seems so to me. The next issue, of course, that we have to deal with is the issue of dying. Suzuki Roshi said, "Life is like setting sail aboard a boat which is about to go out into the ocean and sink." You ready for that?
Not me. I'm not going to sink.
I have a life preserver. And Rilke said that one can contain death, the whole of death, can hold it to one's heart gentle and not refuse to go on living, is inexpressible. The key spiritual work that aging demands we focus upon is the way in which we relate to death. And the way you relate to death is a function of how much you are identified with that which dies. When you were born, you were undifferentiated all of it, and then you went into somebody training, and you became somebody. You became a defined, boundaried somebody. You were trained by people who thought they were somebody. And in the zeal with which you were trained into your somebodyness, what you lost was your connection with the unity that exists behind the diversity. You just got so focused on your separateness, you lost the unity. And the spiritual journey is awakening back into the unity, the oneness, the spirit, the God that permeates and is all things, not so that you get lost in the unity and forget the diversity or your uniqueness, but that you regain the balance. Because once you have in you a recognition of that part of you which is part of everything, which is part of the one, your fear of death is dissipated immensely. As long as you are identified only with your separateness, you are afraid of death. And that fear is going to color all of your years. And the art of being able to look directly at death and directly at suffering, that art, the ability to keep your heart open in hell, to look at what is, look at all of it, is a function of your ability to find in yourself that which is not changing, which is not separate, which is not vulnerable to time and to space. That's the spiritual work. That's the journey of aging. So to undertake this spiritual journey, what is required? Zalman talked about doing our philosophical homework. That is, now instead of just reading People magazine, New York Times, whatever, Variety, start to look for those kinds of literature, resources, books that reflect about these issues of metaphysics, of who you are and what you're doing here. If you have a religious context, do it through your religious context. Read Rabbi Nachman, read the Baal Shem Tov, read etc. Or read St. Augustine, or etc. Recognize the stages of life and honor them, which I would almost do if I could find them. Well, see, I can't honor them because there they are. Confucius said, at 15, I set my heart upon learning. At 30, I had planted my feet firm upon the ground. At 40, I no longer suffered from perplexities. At 50, I knew what were the biddings of heaven. At 60, I heard them with a docile ear. At 70, I could follow the dictates of my heart, for what I desired no longer overstepped the boundaries of right. Now, a lot of people talk about old people don't have to give up their sexual appetites. You don't, but when they fall away, what a blessing. How much free time you have. I never knew. I mean, I don't want to say undercut the game of old people are sexy. I think that's wonderful, and it's sensual, and it's all great. But my God, you don't even have to keep playing with toys all your life. There are other business you have. Don't denigrate it by saying, I failed because I can't get it up, or I can't make it, or I can't do this. I mean, that's absurd. Well, that's going to certainly. So recognizing and honoring stages of life is extremely important. Look at change itself and reflect about that, as we have been doing here. See how, as I've talked about, losing your hearing as a value, not a loss. See how you can use your aging as a vehicle to help you in your spiritual work, rather than being something that's an obstacle. Recognizing in yourself the conflicting forces. The forces that make you want to stay effective in the world, having love and friendship and all of that, and the other part that wants to be contemplative and go inside, and really give that contemplative inside part some space. Water it a little bit, give it some sunlight to grow, instead of treating it as, oh God, I don't want to go out today, as if it's some kind of an error. Give yourself psychologically the opportunity to grieve for the end of dreams, for the end of childhood, for all the people that go away, for the loss of each thing, thing upon thing upon thing. The loss of competence, the loss of people, the loss of lifestyle, the loss of your body functioning, etc. Stop feeding the drama of aging. Your denial of aging or your milking of it by being so attached to it are both getting in the way of realizing that who you are has no age. Who you are is in a body that has age, it's in a personality that is aging and changing, but you yourself aren't. Reflect about death and become friendly with it. Find a community around you of people who would like to really grow inwardly if you're lucky enough to find them. They're called satsang or sangha or the family or the community of spirit. If you don't, then you've got books of tzaddiks, of staritzes, of wise women, of all of that. Tune back into nature more deeply so you can feel the cycles, the natural cycles of which your body and your personality are a part. Find practices of meditation, meditation on impermanence, meditation on suffering and the end of suffering, meditation on non-self, meditation on dependency. Learn how to act in the world in a caring and compassionate way without being trapped in being the actor, by using it all to go inward more deeply, more deeply. Just to give you a flavor, I'm about to draw to a close here. These are the kind of spiritual teachings I work with. You should rest in naturalness. Clear, empty, and naked mind essence, free from any concerns, just rest in your awareness. When your body falls sick, don't indulge in it, but rest in naturalness. Look into the painful sensation itself. The pain doesn't cease. However, you will directly realize the innate state of awareness, free from any thought about where it hurts, what it hurts, how it hurts, as well as the object of the pain. At that moment, the sickness grows less intense and becomes more insubstantial. Regard disturbing emotions from within the space of emptiness. Any disturbing emotion that may arise is wisdom the moment you relax in naturalness. Look directly into it. Don't deliberately reject it or regard it as a fault or indulge it in concreteness or even regard it as a virtue. Just look at it and keep coming back into spaciousness. Come back into spaciousness. The result of the kinds of spiritual work I'm talking about is that you are growing towards being equanimous, peaceful, where you see that the process of the aging is itself the creative act. And you see the way in which you are your own creation. And when you are creating from peace and equanimity and the quiet spaciousness of being in love in the universe, the unity of the universe, you become a wise elder into the society. When you are dependent on others, the way in which you are dependent is a message to other people to help them get free of their fear of dependency. The people I work with who are dying, I have to tell you, are my great teachers. They are people who, in the way they work with these processes, keep teaching me. So understand that Mahatma Gandhi's line, he was on a train, it was rolling out of the station, a reporter rushed up and said, "Mahatmaji, give me a message to take back to the people." He had just time to scribble on a paper bag, he handed out the bag, and it said, "My life is my message." I invite you to look at your life and see what message it is you are. And when you find that part of you that is afraid, that is caught in time and that which changes, get to work. There's no better time to do it than now. Thank you.
This concludes Tape 5 of the Conscious Aging Best of the Conference Collection with Ram Dass on aging and the awakening potential of change. For a complete listing of audio tape sessions from the Conscious Aging Conference or a free catalog of transformational audio tapes, please call Sounds True 1-800-273-8255.